yesterday, and we will be looking at the Italian annual performance, both financial and non-financial performance. We will be getting a presentation from the minister and the DG from there on, and then we will be discussing it. Minister, I don't know if it will be okay with you if we can, after your presentation, then go immediately go to the financial, so that's when you come and discuss both of them. If you don't mind. Okay. I think that will save us more time and we will send to finish. Thank you very much. We already received the presentations from the Monitoring and Evaluation, the FFC, and also the AG on the department performance. We have an idea of what happened in the whole year. We also received 4 quarterly reports. This is just a summary of what really transpired. And according to the AG, where are the areas that you need to improve so that together we can, you know, work in as well as improvement. We know that we're already in the new financial year. There's nothing much we can do, but we can still, during the medium term, influence your next budget and your next search plan or APP so that you are able to improve on the basis of what you need to work on your annual report. But for now, let's allow you to give us that presentation. There's no need to introduce anyone except your new chief of staff, of course, in the manager. For those who don't know you, you may send us so that I can see you. This is the new chief of staff of the minister. The internal office of the minister. It's quite important that we will clarify that he's not the COO, he's the chief of staff, the head of the minister's office. Yeah. Thank you very much. Welcome, and we wish you all the best. Thank you. May we then hand over to the minister for the presentation?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to the honourable members of the Portfolio Committee, as well as the guests of Parliament, the officials of the Department, my Deputy Minister. And I think it's really a pleasure to have an opportunity to account on the activities of the last 12 months, and I want to thank you, Chairperson, for support the department has received in consolidating the 2 sections of the report on one day. Thank you for that. We have prepared a detailed annual report which was tabled in Parliament. We've also tabled a draft presentation that was circulated at the end of last week, and we have expanded it a little bit by giving a few additional illustrations, and a new document was circulated this morning. I'm going to use Chairs on the screen, maybe as a prompt to take us through the report, and I want to emphasize the comments on the report by saying that the annual report itself to Parliament is an important accountability instrument. And the report to Parliament sets out the activities that the Economic Development Department reports within the Executive and to Parliament. And that this presentation then will just highlight a few of the areas in the annual report. It's not an exhaustive setting up for all the issues in the annual report. Having said that, I would like to make a few contextual comments. And these contextual comments relate to the period of the report. The report commences the 1st of April 2014 and concludes on activities up to the end of March this year, 2015. This period was characterized by the fact that it's a transition from the 4th to the 5th administration since the start of democracy. An election took place fairly much at the start of the financial year, and that has some relevance to the report in that we report principally on the ATP that was adopted in the administration. There's still some activities that was done in the first quarter of the financial year that we refer to, but the substantial report is for that 9-month period. The global context was particularly critical in this period of the annual report and continues to do so, to be so. And it was a period characterized, I will come back later to the detail, by slowing global growth. The first signs of China's demand for resources going south, declining, began to manifest itself during the period of the report. At the start of the reporting period, investor confidence was fairly buoyant. It was a period when a lot of the renewable energy projects were coming to the point where they were concluding. You would still see in that period quite buoyant flows of investment. Developed markets is critical for us. As I said in the portfolio committee previously, we are a very trade-exposed economy. Developed markets growth at the start, during and the end of the reporting period was lackluster. And this was the reporting period where the energy shortages manifested itself in the economy. They were there lurking prior to the period, but in the 12 months covered by the report, that we had the significant challenges that became the basis for the intervention of the energy war room. And finally, aware of broad context, at the start of the reporting period and during the period, that we had industrial action that impacted on economic performance. Now, when we started the year, most of what I said were known. They were the context. And our job then was to find interventions that could mitigate, that could address these, and that could keep the growth trajectory that we had mapped out in government, in our public policies, that would keep that on track. To put it simply, it was to say, where's our journey and how do we get there? And the these winds blowing us off course, how do we adjust to stay on course? That really was what we needed to do. And I'm going to characterize the annual report in 8 interventions, Jefferson. And I'm going to organize the information under these headings. And the first intervention was infrastructure. The second one, industrialization and investment. The third one, trade measures. The fourth one, competition measures. The fifth one, provincial interventions. The sixth one, social dialogue. The seventh one, coalition. And the final one I'm going to refer to are interventions relating to equitable growth. Let me take a dashboard approach before going into the program report. Where are we on the big dashboard over the 12-month period? If we compare jobs at the start of the period with jobs at the end of the period, so our measure would be March 2015, end of March 2015. Jobs would have grown by 455,000. By March, 15.5 million South Africans were in employment. If we break the growth of jobs down into key categories, The first one I identified is women's infertility grew over the 12 months by 111,000. And that meant that there were 6.8 million women in employment at the end of the period. The number of jobs for youth increased by 233,000, and that meant that there were 6.2 million young people in employment, young women and men in employment. And if you take a longer view, from the time when the new growth path was adopted in October 2010, to see the point at which the key jobs drivers were identified, then employment grew by 1.8 million. Jobs is of course a single most important metric or measure, but it's not the only one. It's affected by the underlying performance of the economy. And so we wanted to give a few other economic highlights, areas that we wanted to focus on. The first one is the GDP. The GDP is now roughly in the financial year we're talking about, is roughly 3.8 trillion rand in value. And the growth rate in that period was 1.6%. His investment grew by 47 billion rand. Government infrastructure spend was 254 billion rand. And then we decided to take two sectors that we also reported on last year. The first is agriculture. And agriculture's share of GDP, let's call it its value add, grew by 45 billion rand. I've rounded this figure a little bit, or 7.5%. And that's good news, but on the other hand, manufacturing's value add declined by about 1.1 billion rand, or 0.3%. That's in the 12-month period. We look at institutional highlights, and we'll come more to the detail in the course of the morning. For the IDC, some of the key highlights was investment approvals equals 11.5 billion rand. It's disbursements. Now, when you approve big industrial projects, it may take 5-6 years for the drawdown to take place. We approve something that's approvable, 500 million. We don't give the 500 million to the company. There's a funding agreement as they build their factory, one drawdown, as they use working capital to finance stock and wages and so on. They get another drawdown as they upgrade their machinery, they get a third drawdown. So it could be a 5-6 year period. For a mining company, it's often longer. So therefore, what I introduced as an important measure for us to keep an eye on is what is the actual disbursement, how much money leaves the IDC's bank accounts into the private sector. Because that's as important as the approval rate. And that was 10.9 billion rand. For the IDC, close to 6 billion rand was invested in black empowered and black owned companies in 85 transactions. Now, black empowered company is a company that has at least 25% equity held by black Africans. And if we look at the IDC's job impact, new jobs and existing jobs that are supported by its investment over the 12-month period, was approximately 20,000. For CIVA, which is a wholly owned subsidiary of the IDC, for accounting purposes, because it had a different history, we still kept a different accounting. A billion rand of funding was approved, and 924 million set aside for youth only enterprises was approved over a 3-year period, and we'll have more details on CIVA later in the presentation. The PICC monitored infrastructure spending, and if we take the value of all of the projects in the PICC portfolio and look at the present value of those projects, it's about a trillion rand. 880 million rand was received from the Competition Commission to the department, who in turn paid it over to the National Revenue Fund for fines and penalties imposed by the Competition Tribunal. So we have a bit of a money spend of a treasury in this regard. 39 mergers with employment or other public interest conditions were approved by the Competition Commission. And that's also an important statistic because it begins to measure to what extent the competition authorities are taking a range of public interest and other actors and making it a mandatory term of mergers and acquisitions. ICAC increased tariffs on 9 products and reduced tariffs on 7 products, and I'd love to talk about that in a few minutes' time. So that's a big storyline, dashboard if you like, of the first dashboard is where's the economy, and the second dashboard is what are the highlights. So I'd like to go through some of the detail of our work and share it with members of the group. The first intervention is infrastructure. And maintaining large-scale infrastructure spending boosts growth and jobs. So infrastructure is critical. It lays the foundation for long-term growth, and it has both an immediate jobs impact and a long-term impact. EDD's work was in support of an innovative system of integration for PICC, the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Commission, on which cabinet members, premiers, metro mayors, and some of the leadership sits. There are currently approximately 200,000 jobs in the PICC monitored projects. And we made substantial gains for some large projects and at community level. But I want to highlight that much still needs to be done. So we recognize for the enormous backlog to deal with, but we're making progress in a number of areas. And in on the slide, we selected a couple of illustrations of it that are connected in some way to each other. So the first one is 160,000 additional South African homes were connected to the electricity grid. And that happened in urban and rural areas. At urban level, a big part of our work was on building new bus lanes for BRTs, operating those bus lanes. You can now go to 3 kilometer cities and begin to use buses that are part of the bus rapid transport system. And even further down, in Swaziland as an example, buses have free Wi-Fi, which is very useful to students. So if you look from the macro level, which is connecting the house to electricity, you say, well, you've got energy now, how do you move from your house to your workplace? Then we say, the cities are building these bus lanes. The next question is, but fine, they're building, can I use it? Yes, in 3 cities you can use it. Fine, I can use it. But what other things does it bring? And what is value add service in Swami around Wi-Fi? So we've just drilled down a little bit to show how we try to integrate these systems in government that are different but connected to each other. Staying with infrastructure, some of the examples of work done by EDD on infrastructure include operationalizing or switching on the Infrastructure Development Act. And that meant in the first phase of the Act, getting all the governance structures going, establishing a proper secretariat, a management committee, a council, ensuring that they meet regularly, that there's the support and backup for them. And that's critical because we're in the infrastructure game for the long term. And we've got to have solid, proper governance systems in place. Monitoring 18 strategic integrated projects, and this is work that's done for Cabinet. Cabinet is still the national ship, and it can only do so if it has high quality, available information. So give Cabinet a dashboard and say, here is the story of infrastructure, here are the challenges, here are some of the areas we're doing well, and that we can learn from and replicate in other parts of the infrastructure. That's an invaluable resource, not only to the President, but also to the entirety of Cabinet that we can see the integrated story of infrastructure. And then we produced 72 progress reports to Cabinet. We offer a very important observations, they have market sensitive information, but they assist Cabinet to see in each strategic integrated project Where are we going and what progress are we making? We plan projects to see how we're spending, how much are we spending in Swami compared to budget, how much are we spending in KZN province according to budget, and how much are we spending in the Department of Water and Sanitation per budget. Now this is different to the AG's report. The AG's report has come out 18 months after the spending has been concluded. So this is often with a 3-month gap, sometimes with a 2-month gap. So you've got the information almost in real time. You can see, hang on, this is happening here. What is the problem? Is it fixable? And can we gradually work for solving it? The EDD convened and provided assistance to the PICC Secretariat and Management Committee, for example, the meeting packs, the documentation, the discussion documents, identifying the block features, developing inputs and decisions for Cabinet, following up on that, so on. Continuing with the work that we've done on the infrastructure, the next area that I want to highlight is skills for infrastructure. That if we are producing now a system that can not only build infrastructure, but that can also use South African skills in it, then we need to connect higher education work and infrastructure more. And one of the highlights, and I think it comes up later in the report, is a really interesting document that was prepared by EDD and Higher Education and Training on the skills needs in SIPS. EDD also drafted discussion documents for Cabinet on how infrastructure supports inclusive growth, looking at the key trade-offs, the opportunities and the risks. So we're National Treasury and Mincom budget, looks at the budget allocation. How much are we going to put into staff? How much are we going to put into goods and services and how much into infrastructure? They get the economic information on which they can base that. That shows what is the benefits of infrastructure. There is another example of kind of what we do. And that is the bullet point on the Heads of Mission Conference. In August last year, Bilko brought all the South African ambassadors back home for a week. And in that week, they had an opportunity to hear South African stories so that when they go out there again, they can tell that story to investors, to visitors, to other governments who may be partners with South Africa. And we then gave them a strategic vision and some of the key projects that we'd like them to take up at country level in the missions when they go and represent South Africa. We supported the President's role as champion for infrastructure in the African Union. And I should make the point that the AU appointed the President to lead the thinking on infrastructure on the continent when governments across Africa, from South Africa right through the rest of the continent, realize that infrastructure is the biggest challenge and the biggest opportunity for the continent. So they said, given South Africa's experience in infrastructure, President Zuma can lead the work here. So our efforts now is to provide the necessary assistance and information in the carrying out of that executive authority. The President also engaged with global business on infrastructure issues. There is a forum that is now co-chaired by ex-British Prime Minister Gordon Brown that sets a platform where investors can meet governments on infrastructure funding gaps and challenges. And the President addressed that session in January in Davos on African infrastructure, not just telling the South African story, talking about the opportunities for the North-South Corridor, the Van Inge Energy Project, and so on. Another area of work that EDD does is to support unblocking projects that the PICC monitors. I'm going to give you quick examples. The first example is in Hope House in Masopa in the Free State, where there was a challenge with a bucket eradication project. We sent a team of technical people on the side of it, and they helped to unblock efforts to finalize the Bangladesh eradication project. And then they identified technical quality issues that required further work. So we got everybody around the room, got them to make the necessary decisions, and to unblock the inertia that had developed in the system. A second example is Ngobi in Orekere in the northwest. Here the challenge was to get a borehole system going. And water sanitation is a key issue here. And the BICC met with ESCOM and said, hang on chaps, we need to move the electricity quickly to these boreholes. They have quite a big impact on quality of life of people in the area. And that resulted in the borehole being commissioned and functional. A third case study is the Gibson Bay Wind Farm in the Eastern Cape. It's a private sector project. And the wind farm is quite large. If you involve an investment of about 2 billion rand as part of our ICP, that's Independent Power Producer Program. And the project needed authorization under the Subdivision of Agricultural Land Act. Now normally this kind of application could sit for quite a while, even if it's handled in the normal way. And because we have energy challenges, because once you get the energy program going, we will make a team available to sit down, meet with DAF, that's the responsible department in this case, unblock the application, see where the problem is, go mediate between the parties, get the necessary information so that the regulators can make the decision and we can get the wind farm project to proceed. So these are just a few examples of the kind of day-to-day work that often takes place in the PICC. The other case studies on the Okolo Crocodile Water Augmentation Project, where we've got step one done, we've not yet completed the work, but we've got to the point where with PICC work, we got a provisional approval to build a massive new pipeline to Lephalale. Now we're going to the next thing, which is to increase the size of that pipeline before the build progress starts. And the other one is on the Ulmans River Water Resource Development Program, basically the pipelines from the North Dam to industry and to communities. A further example that I thought Chairperson would be worth mentioning in the Portfolio Committee is how our work on infrastructure can promote transformation. So it's showing the connection, the integration, which is a key word we use. When the state decided to ramp up its infrastructure spending, one of the challenges was too much of the money was being tied up in higher fees to construction companies because they were colluding with each other to push prices up. So we got our sequencing well aligned. We said, we're about to spend a lot more money. Let's probe the industry. We got the competition authorities to go in, find the industry information, prosecute, and we got a settlement in the end. We exposed the cartel and we cleaned up. But there's another part to it. That is, how do we bring South African construction companies into the infrastructure mainstream? Not simply as people who do the additional little bathroom to a house in Soweto, or they are subcontractors of the main player, but that they become significant companies that can provide construction services in South Africa, but also we can export those services to neighboring countries. Now to do that, we need to do two things. We need to clean up the industry so there's real competition there, that the existing players don't keep out new entrants, but we also have to make sure that we create space for black contractors, and that is through the procurement system. So these systems talk to each other, and it shows how competition can help with transformation. The next slide, we briefly set out the sums of money spent in 2014 values, so we've just upped the numbers to make it comparable, and you see here that we're currently spending 254 billion rand in the financial year on infrastructure. The highest spending in South Africa, laying the foundation for growth and development. Now, Chairperson, honourable members, in past discussions in the committee, government outlined a vision that we want to use infrastructure to industrialize the economy. The president indicated that in the State of the Nation address about 3 years ago. What have we done since then? We're now working with companies and with our incentive schemes to say that more and more of the infrastructure components of rolling stock should be made in South Africa. We haven't achieved all of it. It's a progressive increase. But here are a few examples. A Stellenbosch solar experimental plant has been opened in Stellenbosch. We've built a wind towers plant in Kuba as a country. Using investment from China with a large truck factory has been built in Kuba. There's a factory to assemble and laminate solar panels in Epping. There's a truck and bus plant in Pretoria. A factory making solar inverters in Cape Town, a factory in Blackheath that supplies buses to municipality and it's majority black owned, a locomotive refurbishing capacity that was expanded, and a wind power plant in Atlanta. So these are examples that you don't import all of the components, that you begin to localize more of them. The second intervention is nicely linked with that last slide, and that is industrialization and investment. Beyond the infrastructure, but also obviously leveraging of infrastructure. One of the kind of things the department has done, over the past 12 months, Chairperson, we addressed many investor meetings, meeting with private sector companies, and hearing the challenges that they face, and resolving as many of those challenges as we can. Supporting efforts to maintain high levels of IEDC funding, supporting localization and local procurement, developing new sectors, and fast-tracking investment. So if I break that down a bit, I make the observation that the principal public sector investment agency in the country is the Industrial Development Corporation. We have a policy framework, very regular meetings, generally more than once a month, and that framework helps to unlock opportunities for the IDC itself. The IDC, in the 12-month period, approved investment projects with private investors worth 36.8 billion rand. And of that, the IDC committed 11.5 billion rand of its own resources. But that's quite key because it shows that every 1 rand that the IDC brings in, the private sector brings more than 2 rand additional funding. But the IDC money is critical because that often allows the private sector players to come in to the project, to engineer the cost structure of the project to make it financially viable. So in a way, the IDC is crowded, economists would say, crowding in effects are very good. CIPA's 1 billion rand supported the development of small businesses and cooperatives. We did work on cable and metal theft, and we did work on the presidential infrastructure technical task team. So here are examples that work well with the investment storyline. With cable and metal theft, not only are we tackling the cable and metal theft, but as we do so, we're trying to find opportunities for African foundries to use more of the scrap metal. On the presidential infrastructure work team side, we work on, we meet regularly with business. This slide says there what we do, and that helps the business community to calibrate, to plan their investment spending, taking into account what we're doing on infrastructure. There's a case study of renewable energy. I provided a directive to the IEDC to develop a renewable energy industry from 5 years ago. Since then, the IEDC has invested 14 billion rand of its own money in solar, wind, and renewable projects. And the remarkable thing, Chairperson, is that the IEDC has literally helped to create a renewable energy industry. See, often people talk about ICPs, you just need to let the private sector come in. When we started this program, there was very limited appetite on the funding side of this. Everybody was suspicious that the state could never pull this off. And we said to the IEC, moving, help create the confidence in the market. And today this is a success story to the country. In the year under review of the IEC, one of its funded projects, the Carpo Stone Plant in Popeye, was opened. I visited that plant for the opening, met with the Spanish investors and workers and communities, and looked at how that energy will assist the grid. That plant will bring 100 megawatts of solar energy into the grid. And by the end of March, South Africa was generating about 1,730 megawatts of energy from sun, wind, and water. Quite an extraordinary feat. The continent's largest green energy program, and one of the most talked about green energy programs in the world. On industrialization and investment, we unblocked 13 investment initiatives in many different sectors, from forestry to steel. And on the slide, we indicate what we did. In some cases, it dealt with land issues, or financing, or trade measures, or energy, or local manufacturing pricing, or dialogue, just getting people to talk to each other and unblock things, or illegal imports, addressing the fighting it, or sorting out administrative processes. So here's an example. In the potato processing industry, the potato processing industry was destabilized by certain imports. We got the parties talking to ITAC to fast track the application for increased duty. The IEC, they also came in, so ITAC came in on the duty side. The ITAC, the IEC offered loans to the company, allowing the company to expand production to supply a well-known restaurant, the Spur, and the result was an expansion of local productive capacity. Another example, Nestle. Nestle is a company that operates in South Africa. It complained of water electricity cutting in Bavarian as a result of cable theft, and it led to massive losses, almost 50 million rand from January to March last year. EDD pulled together COPTER, the DTI and ESCOM to discuss the challenges. A number of mitigation measures were put in place, basically to find ways of reducing or stopping the theft of cable that meant factory to shut down. And got the belief in daily better policing and so on. And the result is much greater stability for the production of that factory. A good example, the Bears Group goes into liquidation, and suddenly we see potential massive job losses in the sector. And Lewis Furniture makes an offer. He says, look, we prepared to take over some operations. But normally it will take so long to go through all competition processes that by the time you finish your processes, there will be no jobs left. So we said we work with the competition process. And the result was that the intervention avoided the closing down of 68 stores. It saved 393 jobs, and it has the potential to create a further 126 jobs. Let me give another example. In Ekurhuleni Metro, where there was a investor that wanted to set up a big recycling factory or operation called Impact, 350 million rand. But the problem was they couldn't get the energy that was required. And we worked to facilitate the decision by Kuruleni to provide the required energy. I can give many other examples. For example, an instance of a pulp company that where the IEC and a local municipality in KZN were in dispute on the price of municipal land. Now, this kind of dispute is on for years and years. They just deadlock. Nobody moves forward. The municipality moves forward. One day the IEC looks at it and says, look, we're not going to be able to have a sustainable factory at the prices you want. And instead of leaving the government for 5 or 10 years, easily step in, met with the municipality, met with the IUDC, got the parties together, found a way of unblocking a decision, and now the IUDC is able to do a feasibility study for an investment in a pulp factory that, if successful, will be a $250 million investment. A final example I think that I'll give, and I'll skip the other examples, is a contract in Greytown. Greytown is a town in KZN, which has water treatment works that needed to buy some steel pipes. And they gave the order initially, or they indicated the order to go to a Chinese company. Not Chinese owned only, but a company operating in China. We looked at this and said, we've got a national program to promote South African products. And the municipality said, the South African price is too expensive. So what we did was we set up with a company, in this case a company called All Longmore. They produce steel pipes. And we said to them, can you trim your profit margin of it? They said, we can do so, but it's not getting enough because we pay too much for steel. We then went to their supplier, asked them about it. We said, can you trim your margin a little bit? They said, okay, let's do that. And by getting collaboration between all of them, we were able to get a better price and get the municipality to buy South African-made steel pipes at a competitive price. So that is an example where if you suddenly have a policy to say, buy South African, very often the policy just doesn't get implemented. So you need agencies and the energy of the public service to be brought to solve the thing and give effect to the policy. Let me go next to the kind of engagement at industry level. So these were examples of factory level or investment level. But we also talk more broadly. For example, we worked with employers and workers in the clothing industry to look at the impact of government programs. At a company called TCSA, Colibri, Interblon, in Pashla Clothing and House of Plastic. We looked at the impact of IDC and government support, and in particular, the combined effort. We were ready to step in because we were losing our clothing industry, and they were literally at the point where the last part of the industry was going to close down. And we focused here on improving competitiveness. We put a competitiveness support program in place and increased investment. And 5.1 billion rand of competitiveness and investment funding was directed to the industry. We worked with the industry on combating illegal imports, and in the last 3 years, government confiscated almost 2 billion rands worth of clothing and textiles came into the country illegally, in other words, without paying the required customs duties or by not declaring the value of the contents of the goods. We launched a design center in Cape Town. We got a legal opinion on the pricing of mineral products under the MPRDA, which allowed us to work with the Department of Mineral Resources, the DPI and Treasury, on how we can use our mineral regime to promote differentiation. We drafted the report of the presidency on migrant labor in the Platinum Belt and how it relates to workplace conflict. Because of course you can say workplace conflict limits investment. But unless you solve the underlying problem, you can't go just work and say, please stop complaining or protesting when they say, but we've got real problems. Deal with the problem, and then as you deal with the problem, you also create the investment climate and respond to the needs of South Africans, South African workers, the South African unemployed. We had numerous engagements with many sectors, which highlighted a few there, the steel sector, finance, tourism, agro-processing, the retail sector, telecommunications and other sectors. We had then global investors in Davos, the World Economic Forum, in London at a major infrastructure investment conference. In New York, where we spoke to global business. In Indonesia, where we spoke to developing country experiences on infrastructure and our investment analysis. I was continuing in the area of the second intervention on industrialization, where we provided oversight and strategic guidance to the IEC during the year. I meet with the board, I meet with the management, I meet with potential investors. Some of the highlights are 11.5 million rand approval, 10.9 million rand disbursements, the job numbers, the black empowerment, the women's empowerment, and the counterparty investments are all there. The slide on the screen now makes an important point that IDC investments are situated across South Africa, providing local jobs and supporting local economies. Of that 11.5 billion rand, the bulk of that was the funding approvals was within South Africa, but a fair bit was on the rest of the African continent. And the IDC annual report gives a lot more detail. So I'm going to summarize here at high level where you have different projects. So if honorable members have a look there, you'll see the distribution of your agriculture projects, your mining projects, and so on across the country. If we drill down there, let me give one or two examples of how it greens the manufacturing sector. The IDC has worked with an enterprise that produces sports and leisure wear, and it became South Africa's first carbon neutral clothing company, meaning its negative impact on the economy, not on the economy, on climate change, is mitigated by measures to reduce energy usage, to shift more energy to renewable energy, and to do other activities that build up the capacity of the climate of the environment to absorb emissions. So if you take all of that these measures together, this company has no negative impact on the environment. We also put together a facility for this company to develop working capital to expand manufacturing lines. Another example is Chic Shoes. I conducted a site visit to a major shoe factory and opened new premises in September last year. It was started by a black woman in 2004. It now employs 300 workers and plans to expand in future and has received a competitiveness grant so that it's not a subsidy that you've got pay on raw materials, but it's a way of improving the performance of the company, making it sustainable enterprise. On CIVA highlights, I've covered some of this earlier, but CIVA benefits 51 small businesses and cooperatives. It has approved 437 million women-owned enterprises. The bulk of its funding went to black-owned enterprises and a growing share of youth-owned enterprises. The next intervention, Chairperson, I want to talk about is on trade measures. I've not covered infrastructure, I've covered industrialization and investment. At 10:30 to trade. We use trade measures to back South African manufacturers in tough global conditions. And we do so in a number of different ways. In some cases, we support that tariffs should be increased. In other cases, we support the tariffs should be decreased. And we do all of this based on the evidence before us. What will be good for South Africa? What will be good for South African jobs? So the first thing that we report on is a paper that Economic Development did, looking at trade flows over the last few years, focusing on manufacturing sectors. And in that trade paper, we were able to show that South Africa is the third largest exporter of catalytic converters in the world. And it sustains thousands of direct and indirect jobs. So we try to find strengths, pockets of excellence in the economy through this kind of analysis. If we do the highlights, the slide indicates the highlights of tariff increases, anti-dumping duties, safeguard duties, as well as measures to bring duties down. The export permits issued, the import permits issued, and the legal work we did in support of IPAC. And one of the important ones is to to try to use our strength vehicle in South Africa, use it as feedstock in our factories. And I'm pleased to note that copper, scrap copper exports dropped in the past year by 71%, and scrap iron ore exports by 14%. We still have a lot more to do. We haven't resolved all of the challenge, but these are useful indications of the impact of our policies. Now, where are we increasing or decreasing tariffs? So there are 90 areas, honourable members, where increased tariffs. That means basically we put an extra tax on imported goods to protect African jobs. We did that in sugar, in basically these industrial heaters, in enamel, in production of enamel, in wire products, in the paper that we need for photocopiers and printing machines, in the paper that's coated with plastic that they use for specialized purposes, in coated wire, and in coiled springs. And what that does, it gives those industrialists and those workers a measure of protection that the law allows, is consistent with the World Trade Organization, and allows them a certainty in the domestic market. We finalized two anti-dumping duties on soda ash and on frozen chickens, and ICAP also did a sudden set review of gypsum, plasterboard and wire ropes and cables. We did a safeguard duty. Safeguard duty is something that you do quite quickly while you have the long-term anti-dumping duties on particular chips. But we don't always put up taxes on import. Sometimes we bring taxes down, and that's called a rebate. It means we give you a discount almost. You don't have to pay the duty. And we do that to help create South African jobs. Now, you may say, members may ask, how does bringing taxes down on imports create jobs locally? Well, it does so when what you import is a component in manufacturing. Let me give an example. We manufacture fluorescent lamps in South Africa. But some of the components that go into the fluorescent lamps are imported. When the price of that is high, then the final price of the unit that we make is higher. And that means it's sometimes cheaper to buy a finished fluorescent lamp from another part of the world than to buy it from South Africans. So by bringing the cost of intermediate goods down where it makes sense, doesn't always make sense, but it makes sense, we can create local jobs. We need that for cranberry juice, for fabric, for furniture upholstery, for dust baths, for chemicals that are used in washing preparations, fabric for slippers, and chemicals for water purification. So these are interesting examples because they cover things like food supply chain with the cranberry juice, but also industrial, key industrial projects. The fourth intervention is competition measures, challenging monopolies and cartels in the economy through competition measures so that we improve the dynamism of the South African economy, of local industries, we prevent abuse of market dominance by big players. What were the highlights of the past year? They were the investigations into cartel activities, massive fines that were received from companies that broke the law, 880 million rand, dismantling the construction cartel, oversight of funds, emphasizing jobs when one company takes over another company, and launching marketing inquiries. On the oversight of funds, there were three funds we looked at, the Walmart Supplier Development Fund, that was mandated during the court proceedings that government voted against Walmart a number of years ago. The upgrade fund that was agreed by a foreign investor when they took over a South African agricultural company, and the agro-processing competitiveness fund that came out of the settlement with Pioneer Foods. Further examples of competition measures. During the year, the competition authorities were notified of almost 400 mergers. This is where one company wants to buy another. And of those 400, the Commission imposed conditions in about 10% of cases, in 43 cases. the number of jobs saved through those solutions were at least 5,340. But there were also other things that the Competition Commission, for example, in the Dairy Bell yogurt business, the Competition Commission not only did a moratorium on retrenchment condition, but it also said that the company needs to continue to provide distribution services to others. Another really interesting example, and honorable members from the Soweto and other areas would be pleased to take note that one company bought another company, and they we said fine, we'll agree to this as the competition authorities, but remove your exclusivity clauses and this small business is your walls. And this covered Meadow Point Shopping Center, Protea Point Shopping Center, Dawson Point, Pimville Square Shopping Center, and Kudumi Shopping Center. The Competition Authority did two search and seizure operations. This meant at 4 o'clock in the morning, you have a pre-dawn raid, you get there, you've got the subpoenas, you ask people to open their premises, you seize their books and the computers, and you see whether any of that can be produced in the subsequent proceedings to show collusion. So the Competition Commission only does this when it has good cause, when it has cut off its own investigations and brought it there. And it did it with a company called Unilever and a company, Sainsbury's Hudson and Knight, for allocating the market for food, oils, and taxes. But the law allows for a company to say, you concentrate on yesterday, I'll take the rest of the country. You go compete. And so when you do this kind of market segmentation, it's the consumer that pays more money in the end. So our law doesn't permit that. We also did an investigation of a further construction breach involving the private sector project in KwaZulu-Natal. The Competition Commission and Tribunal approved a transaction previously involving a company called Upgrade. And as part of that, we put in place a number of public interest conditions. In the past 12 months, we asked the company to report properly on how far they've come with those public interest conditions. The details are kept out there. That company spent about 10 million rand on training 68 farmers or farming entities involving about 170 people. They unpaid 14 million rand to small of the farmers who upgraded to the risk. They provided a 40% discount to more than 200 farmers to store grain in their huge silos that you drive past. And these are all small farmers. And they purchased 14% of their chickens, their poultry, from smallholder farmers. So, again, it's an example where competition is used to open up markets, bring smaller players in, and give opportunity to black South Africans. The first intervention is working with provinces to try to improve the capacity of provinces and the impact on local economies. And it's to align the provincial development priorities to the national development plan. The NDP represents the overarching framework of where we want to go. So it's important that we don't only align national government, I've spoken about that in the past, but that we also align provinces and municipalities to the overarching vision that we've set out. We met with MEPs at provincial level and we did an analysis on employment, migration, and growth in care trends by province. I'd like to unpack a little bit, Chairperson, a few areas of work with provinces. The first area is we asked CIFA, Small Enterprise Finance Agency, and the IBC, to hold road shows in every province. Take your product to communities. Don't only communicate via media, but go into townships, and that's quite a successful program. We did road shows where we brought in provincial development finance institutions and local business chambers to talk to the IBC to CIFA. I want to give the example of a roadshow that is dealt where I met with women in construction to look at how more women can get into an expanding area of the economy. The construction is not men's business. It can be run by women and men of enterprise and energy. The department developed a toolkit on small business. And we presented it for first phase panel. So what this toolkit did was it looked at the entire space and said, where are small business resources and opportunities? A small business person doesn't have the time to go to answer the website. So we put it together for them in one package, which has subsequently been given as a toolkit for the small business ministry. We convened a small business conference on the 7th of April last year that brought together hundreds of new or emerging entrepreneurs to engage with public agencies. We opened private sector small business promotion facilities like the Shanduka Black Umbrella Enterprise Development Awards, which I did in Cape Town in April last year. Deputy Minister, you see a picture there of him, the owner of a spa shop in the Mangaung area, led our engagements with provinces and municipalities, and his work covered economic development frameworks. We sat down with MECs to look at their frameworks, the alignment of the priorities, the social accords that we concluded nationally and what it means for provinces, the constraints to economic development at local level. We hosted a major conference on aligning economic planning and development across the state, which looks at integrated planning and how to get national policy frameworks in local documents. The sixth intervention was a social dialogue. And social dialogue is where we bring powerful interests in the society together, but we also bring communities together. And we did this on social accords, and headlack engagements on the national minimum wage and on industrial policy, the work in clusters, and the workplace dialogue. The screen highlights a few of the key areas of progress. We did a draft annual report on the green economy, of course. It shows that by March 2015, the IETC had put 14 billion rand in, and the 500,000 solar water geysers have been rolled out, and the designation of solar water geysers for local content has been concluded. We did work on youth employment court, reading provinces, where there were a presidential youth in Davao court with delegates, and we looked at implementation of the different accords. So on the dialogue, we facilitated funding for the Western Cape Furniture Cluster, where hundreds of skills training in the furniture industry was provided to 200 workers. We launched the Mitchell Center Skills Center. 2,800 learners can be trained in that facility. We concluded workplace partnership agreements with a construction toy company, with a polymer company, and with a structural and thermal construction company. And these were to try to work through the problems that workers and employers were experiencing at workplace level. So kind of social dialogue, members of the committee will recall receiving copies of the Indigenous Chickens User-Friendly Guide in English and in Zulu. And we worked with the Umthombo Agribusiness Institute to offer training on how to improve indigenous chicken production processes. This was done free of charge with small-scale farmers. We also developed a guide that could be a takeout and it can reach more than the participants in the workshop. The seventh invention is on coordination, and on coordination efforts in the state. This has been what we report fairly regularly to the portfolio committee. And you'll see it in the, on the left-hand side of the screen that we participated in forums to improve coordination. On ICAP, we work very closely with the DTI on Outcomes 4, which deals with jobs, on the ESET cluster, But we also helped to develop the 5-point plan on electricity for the war room when we went through the period of load shedding towards the end of last year. And we did the coordination of MINMEX. We signed an MOU with DEME, that's the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation, and Nelson Mandela Metro to try to reduce red tape in that metro. We work in partnership with the University of Johannesburg to build the capacity of South African regulators. And the training was attended by ICASA, the Competition Commission, NERSA, Treasury, the Port Regulator, and the Department of Energy. And the kind of things it covered was economics, finance, and law for regulators. The final intervention that I want to deal with, Chairperson, is supporting equitable growth with integration of marginalized groups into the economy. We held a conference on manufacturing-led growth for employment and equality, and this was attended by leading academics, officials, and stakeholders. Among others, Professor Gabriel Palmer, an internationally renowned Latin American expert on industrial policy, the chief economist of the European Union, Dr. Caballero Sanz, and South African economists. It was also attended by stakeholders and academics from Mozambique, Zambia, Mauritius, Zimbabwe, and other African countries, so that we build Africa's capacity to industrialize. Over 30 papers were presented with topics ranging from South Africa's super exporters to industrial policy in particular sectors and the interface between mining and manufacturing. I'm pleased to know that we were able to source funding for the conference from a dedicated EU partnership facility, which provided 1.8 million rand for the conference, saving money for the department in the process. So we made it clear we rather will come back to Parliament and say we've got a saving of 1 million rand that we didn't spend because we got the money from someone else. On Equitable Growth, we held two small business knowledge networks to look at the economic potential of townships in the Northwest and the Eastern Cape, and how we integrate township enterprises into formal value chains. What are the opportunities in the supply chain of mining houses for township economies, and we receive requests to build capacity on township economy initiatives and spatial planning so that local municipalities, their regulations, their zoning laws and so on take into account the need to open up the economic space in townships. We, with the Premier of Housing, we launched the Incubation Hub in Ipswich, which provides a step-by-step support to small business companies where you're very small and you're very new, you basically get entry facilities for a period. And then they help you to grow. And as you grow, you begin to pay rent. And so it's an attempt to bring people with enterprise into the formal economy. It's an interesting example of a private sector-led initiative to support small business. We compiled a report on Northwest Black economic empowerment, what is its impact on transformation, and the author estimated that 600 billion rand worth of BEE transactions have taken place up to 2013. We looked at the Black Business Supply Development Program launched by the DCI in 2010, and Black-owned small businesses, what the impact has been in the economy, and we held a BEE workshop with stakeholders from the private sector, from government departments in December last year on the impact of transformation policies. On equitable growth, the IDC youth funding approval increased 73% from the previous financial year. The CIFA youth empowered business approval increased 86% from previous financial year. CIFA disbursed 259 million rand to women-owned small businesses, and the IDC was, there was quite an extraordinary growth in this financial year, Chairperson, in support for women-empowered businesses. And I'd like to draw the committee's attention to the fact that in 2011, the IEC put 71 million rand into women empowered businesses. Last year, it increased it tenfold to 756 million rand, and we think the scope to do even more, to bring women into the economy. And it's not an act of charity. It is a way of unlocking the economic potential of women in the economy. Equitable growth, the IEC supported, for example, 7 million rand for an Eastern Cape manufacturer that produces toughened glass for the construction sector. The IEC supported a young black woman to set up a factory to manufacture compressed biomass logs for braai and fireplaces. So in South Africa's braai and heat, they also empowered a young black woman who produces something that you want to use because it's a good product. And that factory will create 45 jobs. The department entered into a partnership with the International Labour Organization to support the social economy, and we've given examples here of some of the key measures in the Memorandum of Understanding between the South African government and the ILO. We have a research roundtable on township economies in February this year with the SA Cities Network, looking at townships as domestic tourism destinations, the growth of property markets and property prices in one of the areas in Gauteng, the informal banking and saving system operated by foreign-owned stores, and how they have helped to act as a catalyst for growth by migrants and foreigners who come into South Africa and have been successful in the sponsor shop sector. So just trying to map this out, seeing what happens there. And the program is intended to support black South Africans in the productive economy. As an IEC, we're moving from the black empowered model to a black industrious model as the next phase. And in the next report, in a year's time, we'll be reflecting on this is a transition year for that. And it will be quite a key part. I did make the announcement in the budget speech. I'm wrapping up now, Chef, by saying that the annual performance plan, which is the basis of the annual report, is where the department is audited against its predetermined objectives. That the APP don't cover all the work we do, there's an enormous amount of other work that flows from candidate processes that I'm expected to contribute. So those are obviously the additional work that we do. And as required by the Auditor General, the tables in the published annual report provide an overview of the number of achievements and the reasons for variation. On the performance overview for the period, honourable members will see there on the table that in the Economic Policy Development Program of EDE, we had four indicators. In two of them, we met our targets. In two of them, we did better than our targets. In none of them were we unable to, there was not one where we were unable to meet our targets. In economic planning and coordination, we had 13 indicators. In five of them, we met our targets. In eight of them, we exceeded our targets, we did better than our targets. And there were none that the targets were not met. Economic development and social dialogue, there were five indicators. In four of them, we met our targets. In one of them, we exceeded our targets. So for the 22 indicators, half of them, the targets were just met. Half of them, the targets were exceeded. Now, these targets, these indicators, have a number of products like workshops, papers, coordination initiatives, unblocking investments, supporting small business, these are the details in them. So we had 154 of these targets for frontline work, and we achieved 209 deliverables in the period. I am keen to try to improve the impact of each of these. It's not a numbers game, so I'm going to try to focus a bit less on just getting the numbers right, but making sure the development impact is improved. So that's once we got the first a year of running the ADP in the new form. Now the focus is just improve development impact of each one. For the financial year under consideration, the department spent 99.7% of its budget. It paid its salaries. And EDD and its agencies received unqualified audit reports. Now this covers the period, as I said, Jefferson, from the 5th of April 2014 to the 31st of March 2015. We are now in mid-October 2015. So we're going in a sense to also look a little bit ahead. Whilst this report indicates a number of key achievements, I am mindful of the fact that in the last few days, the International Monetary Fund has just issued an important cautionary where it lays the global growth forecast has been downgraded from the forecast they made in July. And it's downgraded by a further 0.2%. And that is for the global economy. They've pointed to declining commodity prices as a key constraint that mineral-rich economies will have to navigate. And they've also pointed to what they call crisis legacies in some advanced economies, meaning things that will constrain Europe from becoming a high-growth opportunity that we can export our cars and our manufacturing goods to. Infrastructure investment, even in this challenging fiscal environment that we face, is critical. It mitigates against some of the global economic headwinds. So if you didn't do infrastructure, you'd be blown completely off course by the headwinds coming from the global economy. With infrastructure, you've got a little bit more opportunity to try to steer. It's not to say we will be immune from these pressures, but it means we've got a better chance of navigating them. And infrastructure promotes developmentally driven growth that brings more South Africans into the economy. A 9-point plan announced in the State of the Nation address identifies the additional interventions in this fiscal year, a fiscal year that's more challenging than the one we're just looking at. And I'd like to conclude by saying partnerships, Jefferson, is going to be critical. Partnerships between government and the private sector, between government and the trade union movement, and of course, critically, partnerships between labor and business themselves, partnerships with local communities, and improving the functioning of the state so that we bring more and more to those partnerships and we expect more and more from the business community, from the trade union movement, so that South Africans can see that we are in fact dealing with the challenges that have been identified. And that, Jefferson, represents the summary of the activities, the non-financial parts of the annual report. Thank you very much.
Thank you very, very much, Minister. This was quite intense and really informative. Really appreciate this. I think we went way beyond what we expected, is to also give us what we should expect at the end of this current venture, which is quite interesting for us. Just wanted to say if you have problems with head, we turn around and allow him to take you back quicker. Okay. Thank you very much. Colleague, I think we should have just a 3-minute break to allow the teaching students
the board.
Contact
such an appointment could end the economic staff from using self-employed by other agencies. These measures enable the department to build on its strategic objectives that Minister just spoke about a few minutes ago. As was indicated, the department has all of its targets and exceeded its targets for 50% of the indicators included in its annual performance plan. For the other issue, the department spent close to 100% of its budget and it obtained an unmodified audit opinion. Now, just want to recap on this. The report of the Financial and Fiscal Commission stated the following. Spending performance across major programs has improved. Now, this is referring to the Economic Development Department. In 2014-15, all programs achieved almost 100% expenditure against the budget, and you will see that on subsequent slides. Regional organization structure has seen significant loss of underspending in 2014. This amounted to 0.3% of the total budget. The department developed requesting rollover during the 2014-15 financial year. Now this reflects the expenditure against the budget for each of the programs in the department and in comparison to the previous financial year. You'll see in both years we achieved almost 100% expenditure against the budget and almost all of the programs within the department. This shows the percentage expenditure against the budget each of the financial years, and you'll see that we marginally underspent against the previous financial year expenditure throughout all of the programs. This stops the expenditure of economic classification. You'll see that our compensation of employees increased from 70 million to 76 million rand, or 75 million rand. Within services, reduced substantially, and we'll talk about the reasons for that later on in the presentation. Our departmental agencies increased slightly. Public corporation and departmental agencies effectively transferred work to the entities of the department. And you'll see that our capital assets, procurement of capital assets, also decreased in relation to the previous financial year substantially. Once again, we do this comparison between the two financial years, the expenditure against the budget, and here again we see this marginal decrease of the 2013-14 financial year. Now, the comparison of spending year on year, the decrease in expenditure remains largely due to firstly the decrease in the annual appropriation of the both of the departments, and the reduction in goods and services of 25 million rand, transfers to agencies of 42 million rand. There's also cost-cutting measures that we implemented by National Treasury, ensuring the reduction in advertising, legal costs, travel, and other expenditure items within the department. As I indicated earlier, fewer assets were purchased in last financial year compared to the previous financial year. Now these talk to each of the programs, or sorry, this is the overall performance of the department. This just talks to this, and I wouldn't go into detail. We exceeded the targets for 11 of our indicators in the performance in the ABP, and we run spent about 2 million rand on the overall budget of the department. Except for program 1, we are spent by 657,000 rand. Program 2 is 100,000 rand, or 20,000 rand. Program 3 was 1 million rand. But in relation to the overall budget, these are small amounts of money. And program 4 was 180,000. Now what you'll see that a large percentage of our funding goes to our entities, about 83% of our funding. Or agencies. Only 17% is utilized within the department for compensation of employees, goods and services, and assets. The big portion goes to the IDC, which is transferred to FIFA, but it goes to IDC because IDC is the owning company, the Competition Commission just recognized 200 won in there, but compared to what they collect in terms of fine, it's relatively small. The competition charge was 20 million rand, I think it's 80 million rand. Now, the revenue performance compared to the previous financial year is slightly lower, and that's slightly because of transactions in financial assets and liabilities. Now here, in previous financial years, we used to report the fines collected by the Competition Commission on the case of financial statements. National Treasury, the Accountant General, had changed the reporting format. So we no longer reflect that on the case of financial statements. So that the notes to our financial statements. And you'll see that in the last financial year, the Competition Commission transferred 880 million rand to the department, which was subsequently paid to the National Revenue Fund, compared to a million rand the previous financial year. The 15 million rand was largely the dividends that was received from the Industrial Development Corporation. Now, in terms of the establishment, the department has 164 approved posts, but of this, the department will only fund 149 because those are the only funded posts in the department. And for the year under consideration, there are 124 posts, full of the 149 funded posts. What we also did was we utilized staff that are not in the establishment. Now we in fact don't, there's no cost to the department for the utilization of the 79 staff. And these staff come from different agencies and government departments. And they're largely used by the CITV technical unit within the department. There are 19 interns that were in the employee department during 2014-15 financial year. The ratio of employed women in senior management positions was 54%. Which is quite a success because other departments are also to reach 50% of the target. In general, the outcome, the department did obtain a unqualified audit of the team, as I indicated earlier on. There was only one compliance matter with respect to verification of employees. I just thought maybe I should just touch on this a little bit. Prior to the audit commencing, in fact, the verification of all of our employees was completed, but because it was done late, that reflected in our audit report. But what we have done going forward is that no appointments will be approved without all of the necessary checks included in the submission that comes to the accounting officer's office. We also have an improved management report. These are issues that are not reflected in the audit report, but they are for management attention for corrective action to be taken. We had no media misstatements, which was the case in previous financial years. For example, we had made changes to the financial statements that were submitted to socially accurate. We had a positive conclusion on performance information. What that means is that there were no findings on our performance information. Evidence was submitted for all of the claims that was made financial year. The management report issued by the Auditor General reflected 25 findings compared to 41 findings in the previous financial year. And the breakdown of that is human resources had 11 findings, financial accounting 8, supply chain 3, information technology 3. You can see that human resources has the highest, but it has improved again substantially, more than 50% from the previous financial year. Unfortunately, those are not on the slide at the moment. So what we've done to rectify these audit findings, we have created a process that we refer to as the EPAM. The CFO on a two-weekly basis needs to management who are meant to implement collective action. And where appropriate action isn't being taken, she escalated to my office. This report also gets presented to the audit committee and our management committee. Monthly basis. Chair, within past administration, we developed the administrative structures and review policies required to look after responsibility in terms of good governance. We do review our policy every year, some of them every 2 years, depending on the nature of the policy. And once again, the department has consistently achieved unqualified audit opinions. We're very close to getting a team audit, it's just for the one area. We will have that team this year. The EU will also commission work to be done through public institutions and universities where appropriate based on MOUs. These projects will sort additional intellectual expertise to supplement the role of EDs covered, really largely on a short term basis. Thank you very much.
Thank you, for the short and detailed for the report. We need one to congratulate you on the financial performance. For the financial area, this is the AG office. It acknowledged that they improved, there are improvements. With those other areas that we should improve on the call. Members, would you want to interact with the children from the teacher? May I note Dr. Hardo, Bob Benin, that is them.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, Mr. Trinity, for both presentations. Mr. I've got a few questions for you and then one for DG. My first question relates to paying about $405,000 being created between the 1st of April 2014 and the end of March this year. My question is, how many of those were temporary jobs in the public sector related to the election in May last year? And secondly, I wondered if you could speak a bit more about what sounds like quite an interesting engagement with the Durga Heads of Mission last year on supporting domestic economic development through infrastructure and industrialization. And I wondered if you could report back on some of the takeouts from that engagement and what actually is going to be done, what was resolved there. My third question relates to renewable energies. You say that by March this year, 14 billion rand from IEC went towards renewables, 1,750 megawatts being generated from sun, wind and water. I was curious to know how that figure tallies with the Department of Energy's commitments to adding over 30,000 megawatts of renewable by 2025. How far are we towards achieving that goal? Next question relates to the section on industrialization and investment. We know from the budget stress that this year that of the 100 billion rand committed for industrial development over the next 5 years by the IEC, included in that is 23 billion rand for the Black Industrialist Programme. And I wanted to know what is the status of the policy documents on that and the general kind of effects on the Black Industrialist Programme, the commitment to create that Black Industrialist over the 3 year period for the ASP, what's happening in that regard. Next, the section on trade and competition. I'm curious for an update on the industry panel of steel experts that you mentioned in your budget speech that was going to advise you on a more competitive steel price for downstream users to stimulate local demand for steel. What progress has there been in that panel's work? How is it related to all the recent developments around applications for protection? What reciprocal commitments are going to be required from companies in future requiring tariff support? And also, how will the Competition Commission's investigation into collusion by the big steel industry players affect your approach to steel pricing for downstream users? Those are my questions to the minister, and one question for the DG, and that is simply the query on page 97 of the annual report, where it says that employees were appointed without following proper process to verify claims made in applications and confirmation of the public service regulation. And could you just provide the detail on that? Thank you.
First and foremost, I think if you look to this particular document of the minister, the coalition leaders and things come very handy. Because the way that we were doing this department is very, very critical. It normally cuts across all the departments, but we are able to zoom in now to say that's what we're doing, infrastructure development, and where we are with each of the coalition and all of that. I think I'm quite happy. And the usage of the resources, as I said, I think it's quite, you are able to say, these are particular jobs that we have received this particular year. That's the work one wishes that. I think I wish to say that this report in particular is really made in the manner that whatever world would have been on PIDD, in whatever that was infrastructure, job driver, I think there is a synergy. Therefore, it simply means that there's a well-paid budget. The other man of the senior minister to look at it, that is the real department is dealing with. You see, when it was split up, then there was this kind of intervention. You need to change the behavior to go back to this and make sure that you invest in some of the companies and make sure that we keep their roads and make sure that we proceed with everyone and avoid your process, it's really that kind of those particular touches. I think I'm impressed that particular government intervention is what made, particular infrastructure and other matters. It was very good to when you were able to see that there is an really intervention now, there is some clear that you are receiving from there, and then while the work is being continued, at least we're able to move from that. The other matter which I think is really that the intervention to localization. You know, it can create this 16 million good afternoon infrastructure issue that you talk about to me. At least to clear this. And again, the intervention on cable must make an attempt, which I think I like that particular one. It was quite a long time that we keep on doing one thing each and every year. They go and fill the cable. And then again, we are going to fix it every single time. And there's no one to come forward and do it. I think those matters that have been created by the department to assist the ACDS and all of that, it will assist us to go faster. The issue of roadshow in page 46, it becomes very clear. But there must be also issues of OGC in passing AG. See, in terms of department spending, the workforce. Now, the money goes to institutions. Now, when we look at the issue of key control, that we need to make sure that we stick to that. We can't really wait until the AG comments on such a matter, while we are supposed to have our own internal. I think it is important that we deal with that, so that we are able to augment and deal with those issues for the I think it's good to do that. The other matter of the issue of supply chain management. You see, that particular one is key, but you find out one link on the supply chain management. Because this is where we need to deal with procurement, we need to deal with key issues in terms of how many costs we receive and all of that. Now, I think those issues that we need to particular skills in dealing with those issues, to avoid some corruption, and dealing with all the range of matters that are being raised. I think it is really coming to you, but you understand. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much, Chair. We thank the Honorable Minister for
a very beautiful presentation, and I hope that the information given here will harm us for a very long time to come. Just before we ask the questions, Chair, we want to indicate that we are noting from this presentation that 254 billion rand have been spent on infrastructure. Some of us who do oxides, some of us who do analysis in various other provinces, we see where this money is going to. There's a lot of reconstruction that is going on there, which is necessary to move the goods around from our country to the region. There's a lot of work that is going to communication. And I think we need to indicate, Chairperson, that quite essentially, you know, we would like to see people getting permanent jobs. We understand that essentially government is not an in-class employer, per se. But government is not waiting for a private sector to do its work. So government comes up with this project, infrastructure, you know, project that provides all sorts of jobs to our people. And the experience that we have, Chairperson, as people who stay in the townships and the rural areas, the experience that we have is that our people are not cheap. They are not saying they're going to go on strike, they're not going to anywhere until they get so-called permanent jobs. Our people are happy to get any type of jobs that government is in a position to provide for them so that they can be able to put some food on the table. So we appreciate the hard work that is done by government to provide these jobs. We see them in my street where I live in Tunisia, in cellular fashion. There's a lot of local starting that is going on. Many of people are employed, they wear, they smile, they pick up in the morning. Because while these jobs are not necessarily permanent, but during that period when they work, they are able to put some bread on the table. So we appreciate that very much, Chairperson. We also want to comment on the 880 million received from the competition a structure in the form of penalty. Someone is saying this is nothing, 880 million, as far as government is concerned, it's nothing. This is a huge amount. If you take into consideration that this amount is bigger than the total budget of the EDG, this amount. So it gives you a message that this money is turned into the fiscal, it will contribute to us improving the lives of our people. And that's speaking on the budget of the EDG. It is also important to know that there are over 2/3 of that budget goes into the NGC. About 100-something billion is then left. But the very interesting thing, Chairperson, is that the remainder of the budget, small as it may be, allows the department to perform the kind of miracles that they are performing in their way through coordination, through the initiatives that they are taking to ensure that there's growth in the country. The small budget then contributes towards, you know, trillions and trillions of land of rent of development in the country. Now there are 160,000 houses that have recently been electrified as part of this infrastructure building that we are referring to. While this is about the electricity, Chairperson, it is also important to know that there are add-ons. It is not just about electricity. If you bring electricity in the homes, it also links also to the aspect of education. Because the children in those houses, in those 160,000 houses, now get an opportunity to study better in their homes, to prepare for exams and so on. And also it creates that atmosphere of happiness in the homes. When there's electricity, everything shines. But it also provides the added value of security, of safety. Because when houses got electricity in big numbers, the zones also tend to disappear. So we appreciate the big work that is being done by government through the PICC and other cultures thinking, making the lives of our people better. Now, on the issue of the role that the president is playing on the continent as a champion of the infrastructure development, would let the minister explain to us what the theme is in the continent, what the response is. Because there's a lot of work that has been going on in the region, on the continent already, but we want to know what the appointment of our president is contributing to, what the response is of the people on the continent. Are they ready for the transformation of the continent? We've seen the walls going down. Possibly the atmosphere is changing for the better. If the minister could respond to that question. In the Free State, the minister indicated that there is this hot house, the Mansoko project, where government is undertaking efforts to finalize the program of reducing or in fact eradicating the market system there. We don't want to take from the minister to say that is not possible. When you take everything into consideration, Minister, when do you think this project could be finalized? Next year, maybe in 2 years? Because this is a very good project. Eradicating the market system is not just about abolishing facilities. It's also about the dignity of our people. It represents the dignity of our people who are not looking how to work. We're just looking at it. So when the minister thinks this matter could be finalized. Now, on electricity, we appreciate all the endeavors, Honorable Minister, that the government is undertaking on renewable energy. We are saying this because you see, this particular one is another case. The gas and solar plant is providing an additional 100 megawatts onto the system. And you know what is happening, you may do be there. In recent months, we have not experienced any change. That indicates quite clearly just how slow government is about the question of electricity. Now, we'd like to know here, Honorable Minister, the conference that was held on manufacturing that involved several countries from the region that tend to educate our government, our people, about manufacturing, what it entails, and so on, so that it becomes more productive. What are the chances of having this type of conferences on an ongoing basis, so that there is growth in our country? And finally, we appreciate the report that you gave to us that relates to the position of the IMF that has downgraded the forecasting that was made around economic growth in the future, because it also helped us to plan. As much as we need to be legitimate, you know, and plan ahead and so on, we also need to be realistic as well. So the report that you gave to us that the situation worldwide in the future may become a little bit gloomy. So it will also, you know, contribute to ensuring that our expectations are realistic, so that we don't really punish ourselves, but we plan accordingly into the future, Minister. So we thank you very much for the presentation. We are positive that we are moving in the right direction, and that South Africa will play a role in the Sahel region and on the continent as well, in influencing
economic
development. Thank you, Chair. Sure. Very welcoming the reports as presented by the Minister and the teacher. And also to say that we need our cross department to the top with that. For it seems that an unqualified report, little achievement. And also to say that if you look at the report they got from the FSC, it does say that we achieved a lot, almost 100% as PDG. That will prove that we are at work as PDG. This work of coordination that is done by PDG, it has done its long ago to pass, and it is continuing. And also to say that the PDG is meant for coordination. So, to sum up, saying that there is an overlap of the mandates, I don't think it is correct. Because the National Planning Commission has got its own job that it was created for. It was for the NDP. There was its mandate to formulate the NDP that you are talking about. Whereas the EDD has a specific task to coordinate the work of the government, of which we are in that strategy, as I can see. And also to say that in terms of the agreement, if you go back to the report at the end of the SFC, the EDD is playing a major role in trying to help those areas which we are finding some difficulties, particularly the loss of jobs by our people. The SFC gave us an example of a plant in Silverton where workers are going to lose jobs. But the intervention of the EDD has played a major role because the money that we put there helped the plant to continue working. It was paid beyond some rent from the EDD. That's a big achievement for the department. The concept that one of the others is talking about. I'll confirm it. It's going to play a role about in producing many manufacturers in our country, because we don't have that, particularly from the majority of the people. Let me address the inequalities that you always talk about. Of which other person in this room, I don't think that I hate if we're trying to address the inequalities of the past.
Thank you. I take it as a general question. Thank you, Minister and DJ, for the presentation. If we can ask that one, Pakian. Okay.
Thank you very much, and I'm sorry that I did not raise that, and I interrupted you from there. So. The question relates to the alignment that the department is doing between the provinces and the locals. That is a very important responsibility task because it ensures a balanced growth across the country. But the question is just, what is the response of the provincial government of the Western Cape in this regard? How much cooperation is the department getting from the province, as far as this coordination is concerned, where the department is trying to ensure, because the spirit of our government is that of cooperative governance, and we be told how the Western Cape government is responding to this noble initiative of the department. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I was thanking the Minister and the Teacher for the report, for the presentation, and clarifying the report before us. Just want to really re-emphasize the importance of your intervention. I like the fact that the report clarifies areas of intervention, which begins to tell us exactly what the department works in and why it's so important to have this kind of a coordinated department, especially on ensuring that growth and development, you know, continues. What I want perhaps the minister to talk on, and not be today, maybe you might not be having those kind of future, is just to indicate to us as to how many of such interventions were made and the impact thereof. It's not that we can't see the impact, but it's still important in the report that we also get the kind of impact that this kind of intervention has made. Even if it's in numbers, it's really going to assist. Because what is important is that you can't care for some of the interventions that we understand because the need arises from time to time. But in terms of reporting, it is important that we get that. What also crucial is the fact that you manage to intervene with such limited resources, both human and also financial. To me, that is what is crucial, what is key, very important and very important. The other issue that I wanted perhaps the DG to clarify on is around the irregular expenditure as appearing on page, both pages 155 and 155. The amount seems to be quite minor, you know, not substantial, but the what's important is the practice. Because it might have money to grow, it might also grow, the amount might also grow. Because I'm saying this because it appears in the audit channel of the report as a matter of investment. The role that the department is playing, and we are meant to understand that that particular role of alignment and synergizing plans and programs is with the DM. I think I really appreciate that. The only challenge there would be that we really get the impact thereof too. Because we want to know, with that kind of intervention, what is a response, what is the response of a problem together with the municipalities? Because we can't really leave out the municipalities here, because then the local development, economic development is as much important as the provincial economic development. But in their strategy, especially the provincial growth and development strategies, that's where you find municipalities also contributing their efforts there. So we want to find out as to how is the cooperation, how is the impact of your intervention in their plans and programs. But at the end of the day, we want to see even the list in terms of performance of the municipality coming on board. Because unless that is done, then there won't be economic activity and there won't be development in that particular area. When I said we are in sustainable development in that particular area, this is to me very important and very worth noting. But we just want to get those, that kind of information. The question I'm going to ask, I think it has been asked, but in another way, just the contribution, the totality of the contribution. I think the million times this presentation did allude to the fact that the work that is done by the IPCC in as far as renewable energy is concerned is quite worth highlighting, especially by us as people who are just policymakers and also who. So sometimes we tend not to encourage the good work that is being done. It is important that we do from time to time encourage by acknowledging the good work that is being done. And the fact that this department is able to coordinate the work that is done by both the private sector, the public sector, and the civil society. To me, it is much to the private sector. So I think we need really to do that. We need to encourage by acknowledging the good where it is, and where we feel there's improvement that needs to be done, we need also to say so. But we can't always raise things that are really going to, not to say the world matter in their performance, but it's something that just to up their performance, we need to motivate on. I had a question, I don't know where it went to. Minister, I think when we interact with during the quarterly report with the tribunal and the ISEC, the competition authorities and ISEC, it was clear that especially on the tribunal, the impact is felt of the members that still need to be appointed of the commission that are still outstanding. Perhaps you want to come up, tell us when are they going to be appointed, and if there are any challenges that the field is still working on, maybe that give us an indication that by the time this would have been done. And that would help the service facilities in the world. I think the Deputy Commissioner, the ISEC, is the one that has been absent for some time now. So if we can premier short of that. Otherwise, we want to thank you for the work. Well done. We can see that you are really doing a lot of work. May I then give you the
well, thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much to the honourable members for not only the complimentary comments, but also for asking some very thoughtful questions which allow us to be accountable to Parliament. Chairperson, I'd like to suggest that I ask the DG first to respond to the questions that have been asked him. And then I'd like to your permission, ask the Deputy Minister to respond in particular to some of the issues around coordination and the provincial and municipal interface. But any other remarks that you may want to make, it's been an enormous support in the Ministry and understand the wider ambit of our work. And then I'd like to respond to the main issues that have been highlighted after the DG and the Deputy Minister. So with your permission, Chair, the DG may want to deal the accounting issues.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members, for the kind comments that you made with respect to the audit outcomes. But the CFO is here, and she's taken a lot of all those compliments with respect to the finances that is very well managed in the department. With respect to the question of dating by the honourable member, what is required before an employee takes occupation? Is all their qualifications, financial standing, criminal checks have all got to be done. So what we as a department has been doing is making a letter of offer with a condition that says they're subject to all of these to take occupation of the position. Because some of these processes take a very long time to come to a conclusion. So what we have done, before we all actually got to see the law, we have finalized all of that. And all of those employees came there clear. The qualifications that is stated in the CV, no criminal records. But because it was done prior, the audit indicated in the report. But what we have done is apart from now, we put process in place. And if I take even a bit longer now, in terms of employment, I will engage the relevant parties that do the checks to see whether they can't pass check that for the department, and they will agree that they will assist us in that regard. And so I'm hoping I've answered the honourable members, President. With respect to the usual expenditure, Chair, I can say to 154, in the last financial year, the department did not engage any usual expenditure. The usual expenditure is outstanding that needs to be condoned by the DTSA, reached the previous financial year. So controls have been put in place to ensure that we don't have serious development. That's what we've been attaining in the last financial year. Chair, hope that answers your question. Thank you. Sorry, there was one other question with respect to the entity, why you can transfer to the entities and the controls. What is done at the Macquarie? Because the entities have a heavy regulatory expenditure, I think it's 200,000 in total. And we have engaged with two of those entities, but we've also requested them on a quarterly basis to submit to the party the corrective action that they will be taking. And once they've implemented the corrective action, the Beijing and audit verify that that corrective action has in fact been implemented. So that is a part that we can get an assurance in that respect.
Thanks, on coordination, I do understand why people get so much confused about it, because it's another side that doesn't come out of the generic, it doesn't come out, or doesn't come here out of the, when you work as working, as you do your work. Even then, I can confirm that maybe even most of us would find it very strange why certain things are not part of government in a particular name. But I think the president has actually assisted us in that we've been complaining about policy implementation for too long. And we kept on saying our policies are fine, it's sort of legal. But we don't see the outcome and there's no movement. And I think his approach to say to us, what we need to do is to focus on the things that we need to turn around to get things to be done. And I think that a lot, because just with that statement, it has assisted us to be able to see the magnitude of the work that is supposed to be. And I just want to give an example on the economic field. When he started, I think, in this democracy, we had one department called the Department of Trade and Industry. It has a lot of work that it is supposed to carry out, a large span of work, with 20 agencies within itself. We expected it to be very strong in driving smaller and small business and also SME driving smaller and SMEs expected the minister to do trade and industry somewhere else, expected him to actually stay and look at the issues of policy. We expected the same minister to start looking at how, because the economy is not that located in one, here is where economy is not like water, it's supposed to supply water here from the river to the people. It's like all over the show in whatever you're doing. We're expecting him to keep on identifying and pulling together, you know, that kind of work. And I think it has proven that that was very massive work. And just out of that intervention of the president to say, look, hang on, can we say to ourselves we have a matter to deal with the trade and industry, interact with the world, pull in things there that you want to do in terms of investment. Can we actually pull ourselves and look at the development financing on one side, look at the people that just can unlock and go to agriculture, go to minerals, go to energy, and identify the things that we need to go. And the special two departments, the department two, DG and DGR. And later on realized, even if you have done so, the emphasis on our SME is a small development, the cooperatives, policies that we created, but there's no authority in getting them to go. And you then have your department for a small business. You see the management, it is a kind of a management style that suits within our environment of the two federation. That's not right. Because if you begin to, you look at the organization where it is, and you say, have we actually now made sure to be in a particular level? And then say, this is how we just need to get things to go. And I think that that has actually assisted us a lot to be able to focus in various areas and do that, and be able to do a lot of things. So that is why even when we do the coordination around, when we present these and say, these are the interventions that we have made, and these are the impact that we have seen, we need to apply. Because we can see that by unlocking the wheels, we're not just talking about it. When we talk about going to provinces and go to local governments and unlock them, it's our task. Just go look at the energies, they unlock them. And it does assist to get the actual outcome that our country wants to have. We have got a good cooperation with provinces. The Western Cape is very cooperative in terms of forwarding. The metro here is also very cooperative. We're working with them, their team, they have given us officials that we work with. I was in Choi the other day, and the mayor said to me, look, after this discussion, I've in touch with the communities. I want to come back very soon. So I promise you, before the end of November, I'm coming back here so that we deal with the issues. Because then we're dealing with the infrastructure, I'm like, no, mayor, put aside all the other things. Don't do skills, you're going to get confused. Just look at what you have and start shifting things. Look at your goal, George. And just start shifting things. And it's gonna say, you know, I never thought that the taxes are very important in this system. You know, and in the middle. So that's the kind of work that we are doing, and that's how it actually assists us to move forward. I'm just going now. I'm going now to Palabra, to go Palabra tomorrow, because they are reaching their energy. And we know where it comes from, Chef. It comes from a disgruntlement of a community that was fighting and fighting with the inland today. And we turned in and said to them, look, do you want to spend time fighting amongst yourself, or do you want to spend time looking at the future of your town? How you want to get it right? The industry, big industry, small industry, traditional leaders, they came together and said, this is what we are putting in our roadmap to the improvement of our town, and to make sure that our own people get in, I mean, the technical, and that's the impact of the coordination. Second, to move on to the other areas is that, and I just want to say that I'm here through the concept that the community is having around issues of quality of jobs. Issues of quality of jobs. It's a very critical area that we need to look at in two ways. Is that as we work, we must begin to, I think the minister spoke to that, we must begin then to look at the kind of capacity that we build now. How can we build a pipeline so that people remain there? The other one that we need to look at is also this matter around not only, the community should not worry only about it. As we work with the municipalities and the provinces, we begin to pick up other things on the ground. It's around issues of characterization. It's very critical element that we must begin to look at, because it's very true, the quality of the employment, I mean, with the employment as well. We have President Machina for 20 years, but no difference from a person that has been working in a temporary, because it doesn't benefit, it doesn't increase, change the quality of the nature of that particular person. Just two examples. I want to give this aspect of labor blockchain. We really have to look at this aspect of labor blockchain. We need to look at it further, because it's no more. I understand the intentions I wanted to do, We wanted to say in a situation where a temporary jobs and people, elections can move people from one point to the other, but it has actually not taken a long different direction. We can proceed up in all the areas. Where even when a job has already been created for a person to be able to work for life, it's still now made to be active. This is going back under that category of work, and I think it's something that we should be looking at. And it is creating a lot of instabilities in communities. All the number of protests that I got to remember, I actually mentioned that this is actually beginning to come out because the quality of those are beginning to approach. The other one that relates to that is this issue of casualization of people in jobs. It's becoming a problem. There are also certain situations where you find people with a job now. We wanted to make it a temporary job because we're not sure. But a company now stays and it actually starts in life. And instead of us moving the people into permanent, we still make them to remain where they are, even as people are still building up the company. I think it's something that you must end it as a country because the last one was to speak to, and I know that the minister speak a lot around this, but I just want to speak to the other areas that you mentioned to go ahead and do, is that aside from infrastructure and the posture of Africa, the situation, the posture of Africa is actually very good because there is now a collective view on industrialization, strategy, and the EU has already done this. I mean, Africa as a whole has been adopted that. And the collective working that is towards wanting to realize it. And is all the eyes are really looking at us, South Africa, we actually lead in all the aspects there.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson. And I appreciate the comment that DJ and DM has made, which leaves me few issues to focus on. Let me start with the questions posed by Honorable Carlo. The first one is on the 105,000 jobs. Now, I think we should look at two parts of the question. The first one is to have a fact-based analysis, and the second one is try to lift the economic conversation in the country. Because we can wallow in a kind of addressing as a society in which all that happens is the level of insult that parties, individuals, commentators, trade with each other, undermine the national project, the reconciliation project and transformation project. Or we can have a conversation that's fact-based, that's rational, that's respectful, and works on how we lift the country up. And speaking here, representative both of the ruling party and also our government, I think a strong opposition, a forceful opposition, is the fundamental part of democracy. So I'm looking forward to this and many other sessions of the Portfolio Committee where we'll be able to engage with members of Parliament from both the ruling party and opposition parties in a rational, fact-based, respectful way. And I think that's because I've seen commentary, they are in the public domain about this 5,000 jobs and the stir that really has more to do with elections. Where exactly to those 105,000 jobs come from? 183,000 of those jobs were both in agriculture between the 1st of April 2014 and the 31st of March 2015. 149,000 were both in business services, private sector business services, and that covers a wide range from finance to a range of activities outside of the finance sector. 132,000 was in construction, and that was a private house build as well as the national infrastructure program, and 58,000 came from domestic workers, or people that are employed in private households, either in cleaning services or in domestic work. Only 22,000 came from the category called community and social services, which cover both a full-time employee in the state as well as expanded public works programs. So if anything, the vast bulk of this, the single biggest lift for us, in that period, that 12-month period, was agriculture. Now, of course, the difficulty is we're now faced with drought. So looking forward, not looking backward for a moment, drought is going to be a big challenge whether we can sustain this increase in employment in agriculture. So really, I think it's unfortunate that there is any inference that this is linked to the 2020 election. Strictly speaking, 1st of April 2014, 31 March 2015, the figures are there in the public domain. Where did those additional jobs come from? The second area that I want to deal with relates also to a question that Honorable Carter is around the ERCO meeting with the ambassador. And like Honorable Carter, I thought it was quite constructive and useful because it gave ambassadors who are our representatives in other countries not only a series of talking points, but also a series of action points, things that they can do. So let me give an example. We gave them a project book of key projects that we've been dealing with now. In infrastructure, but more generally, not only in infrastructure. And we said to them, what opportunities are there in the countries where you are for us to help industrialize Africa? So we now, since then, we've had some interaction with investors. Obviously, these are confidential discussions that they have with investors, but our sense is that that was an absolutely worthwhile investment of time and thought. And it pointed us to the fact that if we're going to get the best from our politicians, we've got to give them much better material. And I don't mean the storyline only, I mean, this is a project. Take the load of scanning machine that I spoke about previously. It's to identify markets abroad that we want to sell that machine and see the South African embassy as a means of supporting and assisting South African investors to get orders from abroad. So that was the very valuable part of the discussion. On renewable energy, we have the vocabulary as well as it was raised among others by the Honorable Gianni and the chairperson. Perhaps I could deal with all those renewable energy issues together. First, I think on the question whether we will be able to achieve the broader vision that the Department of Energy has set out in the Integrated Resource Plan to massively scale up renewable energy. I remain convinced that we will be able to achieve it, but I want to indicate two things. The one is renewable energy is currently cross-subsidized by coal because on a like-for-like basis, it's a more expensive technology. And our hope is that technology innovations in the next number of years will bring down the like-for-like cost of renewable energy. That eventually we will be able to get either equivalent prices or even cheaper prices. Because from a climate change point of view, it's necessary that we invest in renewable energy. But from a development point of view, we don't have an enormous amount of additional resources we can put into it. So we are hoping, we're backing technology innovations. And in the climate change talks, we are urging nations globally to co-invest in solar technologies, wind technologies, and so on. And then in South Africa, we're trying to do a little bit of work on what's not a classic renewable energy, but it's a different technology, it's a fuel cell technologies that uses platinum, which is, of course, much more climate friendly. So a big part of what will determine the extent to which we can achieve or perhaps even overachieve our targets is what happens to the price path of renewable energy. at this class, we prepare to pay effectively a premium. To say, look, we're not going to be able to get anywhere if we don't forget to take someone else. So the risk is we pay a bit more, sometimes quite a lot more, but it's because we then expect the price farm to come down. That's really what the strategy around renewable energy stands for. A developing country, a poor country, like South Africa, pursue that global commons burden. In other words, to do what is good for the global commons is really, I think, quite commendable that we do it as South Africans. Not just government, it's we as a nation have taken this decision to contribute a little bit more to secure a more sustainable climate change path than what industrialization has given us in the 20th century. So that's on the overall issue of targets. On the specific issue of where the renewable energy program is now, it has in fact moved quite well. We have now more than, let's call it about 2,000 megawatts of renewable energy that comes into the grid. But there's been a little bit more development since the end of the financial year. And that is a big contribution. It's three key technologies. It's wind. It's photovoltaic, which is a solar technology that effectively converts sunlight to energy that goes immediately onto the grid. And the third one is concentrated solar power, which takes sunlight, it stores it for a short period, and it pumps it into the grid. And then the final one that I refer to is hydro energy. We've got one, a reasonably significant one now on the Orange River. So those are the technologies that are currently there. On the question of the opportunities in the renewable energy, we think we can do better in the level of localization of components. Because we pay a premium, we also need to get a better deal from the international renewable energy industry that more of the components must be made in South Africa. Do you know, agree if we put that as a condition? The point is to try to price it to get the necessary support and it can become an export industry. And that's going to be the challenge because China's worked with it. Denmark is starting to be here. Spain is competing with the space. So we're getting into a very crowded market and we're trying to find an opportunity to develop a components manufacturing capability. On the question of the IPT's success, thank you very much, Chairperson, for what you said. We're taking quite an important additional policy risk. The policy risk is we have said to the IEC that when they entered this market, investors were generally quite reluctant and shy. Now the private sector is so confident about the renewable energy program and we get to crowd in a lot of private sector investment. So we've said to the IEC that it need not maintain the same growth rate to its new renewable energy program because the normal capital markets are now beginning to bring that money. Now we can look at it developing opportunities in other sectors in the economy. And of course, the easy one out of the mature market is just to keep on lending. Our numbers will look good. But the point is not to look good in numbers. The point is to have impact. It was a comeback impact right then. So there's an important shift where you say, stay in that space, but you don't have to invest as much because the biotech is now coming more to that space. The next question that was asked is on the question of industrialization and investment and the policy regime. I have finalized for the IEC a framework that it applies in the management of the Black Industrialist Program, the 23 billion rands made available, and they are on the roadshow now to put that to potential users. We had a very good conference that was co-hosted with the Premier of Halting, not in the last financial year, in the current ones it will be a reporting thing, we'll come back to later, in which we brought together a number of either smaller industrialists who can scale up, or people with good ideas who need backing and support, and we highlighted the program to them and what they will do. And the IEC will be communicating much more actively now in the next few months to publicize his program. Are we linking a program to other programs to promote industrialization in government, particularly black industrialization? This program that the DPI has, that the state-owned companies have, and so on. And all of those are being correlating with each other. They all speak to the same outcomes that we seek, which is to strengthen the opportunities for black South Africans to be in the core productive sectors of the economy, not as passive shareholders, 5% there or 10% there, but as contributors, as wealth creators in the manufacture of goods, in the production of key services, in the digging of key minerals, in the growing of key products that are consumed here and elsewhere on the continent and in the world. So I think we're making good progress there. On the steel industry matter, obviously we're involved in careful negotiations at the moment with all parties, and the regulators are applying themselves, so I'm going to be a little bit cautious about the public comments, given that these are processes that are regulated by law. But as a general approach, as a policy approach, we said to the main steelmaker that we recognize the challenges that he faces, but we have to balance those challenges with two important considerations. The one is to ensure that in providing support to an upstream steelmaker, we don't so significantly distort pricing for downstream users that we simply transfer the problem from one part of the value chain to another part. To put it in simple language, if base steel prices go up hugely to deal with the economic problems that the main steelmaker faces, then the customers who are South African companies making steel pipes, making machinery, all of them, they pay a higher price, and they are then exposed to import competition. So we've got to get the pricing right. The second thing we said to them is that we also have to ensure that in dealing with the steel industry, that we don't rely only on protection. There has to be additional fresh investment to improve the performance of factories. A number of steel mills have been neglected historically during the period when commodity prices were high and steel prices were high. Companies, in some cases, seriously underinvested. And they've acknowledged that. They've said, look, we hear you, we agree, we also accept that there was a lack of investment to maintain the competitiveness of enterprises. So part of any wider agreement is one dealing with fresh investment by the shareholders that will improve the overall competitiveness of the industry. So there will be reciprocal commitments that will be finalized as part of those discussions. And in that context, the Competition Commission inquiry into the steel company's conduct and the work the government does are so well meshed, so well coordinated, because in fact Competition Commission is seeking exactly the same outcome, a competitive industry and competitive prices that it charges. And so I think we will be able to find, I'm very confident, an all-in approach that deals with trade matters, competition matters, a broad approach to pricing, and issues of investment in jobs. It has to all be in the mix. In fact, also jobs is critical, that if industry is looking for support from government, government is very, very clear. The key thing about it is we have to support and promote jobs in South Africa. The Honourable Bikini asked a number of questions, and they thank you very much for the comments that was made. I think Deputy Minister has covered some of the questions and issues, but let me underline the importance of the efforts to deal with cable and metal theft that Honourable Member has made. I'm pleased that in fact we have now before the Justice Portfolio Committee the Criminal Matters Amendment Law, which arises from a TICC initiative to deal with cable and metal theft that has caused widespread harm to the national infrastructure, provision into community services, And the PICC in December last year adopted a series of measures. We announced it during the summer debate that you honorable members can recall, and we captured that in the form of a draft bill, which the Department of Justice is now bringing to Parliament. But there's been very close collaboration and partnership from EDD's side with the Department of Justice. We've done a lot of the technical and legal work to support the Department of Justice introduction of the bill in Parliament. And I'm also, the question was asked about cooperation and coordination. We had support from all the provinces on that bill. Every premier, with no exception, spoke in favor of the initiative by national government. We've had, in fact, 2 days ago, the city of Cape Town came out in support of what national government is seeking to do with that bill. Because wherever you are, you face the same problems in the country, as one country, as one economy, and therefore your solutions need to look at solutions that are applicable in one country. And so that's really an example of cooperation across the three spheres of government to achieve what we need to do. One of the issues that Honourable Pinini raised on agencies, DJ has answered the question from an accounting office point of view. I recognize, Honourable Member, that there is an additional wider dimension that you pointed to, and it is an area we need to be doing a little bit more thinking on how to strengthen and support constantly strong and good governance in the entities that receive money from Parliament and has an important relationship with economic development. Honourable Chair, the comments were made. Thank you again for some really helpful specific suggestions that you've made. I'd like to focus on the a few areas that you raised. The first is on jobs, and I'm enormously gratified by the work that members of Parliament do to connect individual job creation initiatives in, for example, the EPWP, Expanded Public Works Programs, with the policy work of government. And those things don't fall from the sky, they're the result of an active decision to try to create a bridge between unemployment and long-term, full-time, decent work opportunities. That's important that we do that communication. But we increasingly saying that while we need to do that, we also need to look at that category of young people, all the way from 18 to 25, who are not in education, who are not in employment, and who are not in training. Because in many countries across the world, that is the what they call the age cohort, the category, that are typically in vocational training. And so if we don't give our young people skills in that period, we reduce their employability throughout life. So while the public employment programs have been very helpful, they've got to be integrated more and more as we go on with technical training opportunities. So that's going to be the challenge for government to grasp in the next phase of developing this. President Zuma has been designated and requested by the African Union to act as the champion of infrastructure on the continent. And when the African Union summit takes place, the Interstate Summit, the President essentially sets out the framework for continental thinking about investment in infrastructure. And I think his colleagues are highly appreciative of what the President and South Africa brings to the African infrastructure story. And there's a concrete thing. For example, in the DRC, as Honourable Members will know, the Ingwe is capable of producing an enormous quantity of energy. To achieve it will mean overcoming a key set of political stability factors that will be required long term, engineering, technical requirements, funding issues, and so on. The president has come in and indicated that South Africa will act as an anchor. An anchor both on a financing side, but an anchor also by buying electricity that is generated from India. You say you'll buy electricity, banks are prepared to come in and put additional money on the table. So it's not just in concept, Honorable Tiani, that the president is doing this work, it's also in integrating what we're doing at a practical, technical level with what neighboring countries need. So that's what's been quite important. On the Masopo project, the Hobhouse one, in Hobhouse, what we've been able to achieve is the project that we specifically worked on, the market has been eliminated there. However, the informal settlement has grown subsequently. So there are additional challenges, as one of the things, migration is a critical part of the South African equation, that happens throughout the world inside the country. So what we really need to do is address the challenges in the new settlements and also deal better. We don't think we're dealing as well as we can with the operations and maintenance issue around the sanitation in Hobhouse. So I think we have a conversation after the session to both get better feedback that Honorable Tiani may have, as well as to share some of the feedback that we've had. Mm-hmm. And if necessary, we can do a departmental site visit to see how far things have come since last we intervened. On the conference on manufacturing, as an example of the kind of things that the department has sent you, I think it's a suggestion that we will definitely look at. I am trying to find a good balance between the ideas generation of the big conferences and the ideas implementation. Because we tend to be very good in developing great ideas, but a lot of the energy then goes into developing the idea, not in developing the implementation. So we will do more of these kind of things with your support, but we'll also try to shift more of it. In the structure of staffing and budget in the department, I've asked the accounting officer that I would see more of a shift to implementation capacity, the ability to do the kind of practical things like the hot house, so that we're able to move away from great expression of policy, but not necessarily as strong in implementation. There are some successes that's coming out of that shift that we hope can build on. Indeed, your point about the International Monetary Fund is well made, and it is something, there's a sobering sense currently in global economic circles because of China's slowdown. Honorable Taylor, who's now also acting chairperson of the committee on the unqualified oil, thank you very much. We're very happy that you've achieved that. They say, acting chairperson, when you get praised, the best thing is to say thank you. And when you do well, the best thing is just to enjoy it. I'm going to muddy the waters a bit. I'm going to complicate the story a bit by saying that whilst we're very happy that we've got an unqualified audit, we should remember that what an unqualified audit measures, it measures that you're doing things in the right way. It doesn't measure that you're doing the right things. So we've got to constantly focus not simply on getting a unqualified audit, but on doing the right things. That is, in a sense, even more important that we do what our people need. We've got to do it in the prescripts of the law, of course, but simply doing things within the prescripts of the law and not having any impact is the worst thing that one can do. Because we don't get elected with the purpose of complying. We get elected with the purpose of delivery. In the process of delivery, we've got to comply with the rules that there are. But we mustn't forget what's the purpose of being in government, to deliver. And we've got to train civil servants to fix to make sure that they comply with the law, but to say, that's just, it's like breathing. You've got to do it. You're not praising yourself much for breathing. Actually get out there and let's do something with the oxygen that's going into your lungs. And that's for me the key challenge that we've got to get right. And the public editor when the newspaper spoke focus on qualified voices, sort of thing. Civil servants sometimes so scared that the only thing is to comply. And while I certainly want to argue strongly in favor of unqualified audits, it's necessary, I want us to shift inside our department the focus on delivering as the principal thing. That we measure ourselves with, we've got to get more impact for every rand that the taxpayer gives us that we spend. Thank you also for the comments you made on the plan that was saved with support from the EDD. And then I think, Honourable Taylor, you raised a very important issue around inequality. It's become the defining issue globally. The big policy debate in economics is now about inequality. Because society recognizes that you can't keep social cohesion. You can't keep citizens feeling connected to the national project, whether that's the national project, the Chinese project, or the American project, or the South African project, if you have rising inequalities that divide societies. So we need to deal with inequality as much as we need to deal with issues of growth and employment. And it's that set of issues that will become much more prominent in the next few years. The discussion there, I think, is certainly not evident. And it's only inequality issues that bringing young people into employment, ensuring decent wages for people in employment, providing unemployed people with skills that can support employability, launching public and private programs that create more job opportunities. All of those are important parts of fiscal measures on the tax side. All of those taken together can help to reduce inequalities in a society. It's an absolutely fundamental thing for us. One can talk about freedom and opportunity as much as you want to. If you don't address the reality that we have very glaring inequalities, and those inequalities need active steps by all of us as South Africans, then you're not going to build the cohesion you need to sustain the national project. Any long-term guarantee of democracy rests on the consent of the government. And people can sense when they can see that there is, in fact, real progress addressing these kind of things. So, even though we sit with one part of the issue in the economy, it is important. Wherever we are, there's competition policy, trade policy, we ask the question, how is it helping with jobs and equitable growth? So when we use the phrase equitable growth, we talk really about trying to reduce the glaring inequalities in our society. Honourable Danny raised the additional questions on provincial government of the Western Cape, and I think Deputy Minister has dealt with it very substantially. I want to make one point. When we're out on platforms, one or other party, one or other group can make many different claims, but when we work inside an intergovernmental system, everybody realizes how interdependent the three spheres of government are. Many, many instances where the Western Cape government comes to national government and asks us, please help us to unlock this opportunity, do that, because everybody recognizes that you can't do something in one sphere alone. And there are many instances, and perhaps at some stage I can go through the list. It may be very helpful for the committee to go through the list of initiatives by national government that creates jobs in the Western Cape. We can do that. That is quite substantial, very significant. And to need to underline the point is one country. It's not a federal system, or it's not an independent country, the Western Cape. It's part of South Africa, and the three spheres of government has to work together, are working together, and when we make claims about gains, you know, all of us contribute. When things are tough, all of us have to take responsibility for that. That's really what an integrated system is. So I've highlighted that, Chairperson, because the public commentary on some of these matters are not being particularly helpful. And I think one needs to get to a point where it's a conversation that is helpful to the country, a conversation that points to how government can support each other, different departments at national level, different provinces, even collaboration between provinces. There's a huge opportunity between the Northern Ken and the Western Ken on the Ayo side. Saldanha's existence is going to be enhanced and supported by iron ore that comes from Sichuan. The eastern part of the Eastern Cape expansion and development is going to be enhanced by an economic connection with the city of Ethiopia and the big markets that that creates for the resources. Mpumalanga's own agro-processing development is going to be enhanced by integration in the housing agro-processing value chain and the market of housing. And I can give more of these examples. So to see provinces as nine competing entities doesn't recognize the huge synergies and connection between provinces that are important. And that's where the Deputy Minister is doing really fantastic work in showing those connections, in trying to connect, to strengthen those connections in the work that he undertakes on behalf of the department. The Chairperson raised the issues around the tribunal, the additional members. I was seeking to do it by the end of the financial year, and it's trying to ensure that we maintain both transformation imperatives, so that the constitutional requirement, and that we do it in a manner that retains and strengthens the effectiveness of our institutions. So it's to balance those and to ensure that we achieve what we seek to do. The Chairperson also raised the issue of EDB's limited budget and the impact that the department is able to have with that limited budget. And I would say, first, I'd appreciate, I'd like to convey through you, I think, Chairperson, our appreciation to the Chairperson for that. I'd say that we have one of the smallest budgets in government, if not smallest. Maybe in the lowest 3 or 4, I would imagine, once you take out transfers. We're down to about 150 million or so. That's the budget of the department. But it's able to achieve a lot more because of the system of coordination in government. So when EDD does well, it's also because we have partners who work very well with us. So not all of the gains simply one minister or one department. So I want to acknowledge the importance of working with other colleagues right through the three spheres of government. The Minister of Justice has to legally bring the Criminal Matters Amendment Bill to Parliament. And therefore, his role, his contribution is key if we get to deal with the issue of cable and infrastructure. So we may well have brought it up from its impact on infrastructure, and by working together that we can achieve that. I also like to say that we want to leverage more from our agencies, because effectiveness is not a function of size of budget. It's how well we use the human and financial resources and regulatory resources of the state. So that's where we're going to be doing, hopefully we'll be able to achieve more. And I think the Chairperson raised this in a way that I can then describe with a soccer analogy. You know, 5 years, 10 years ago, the dominant measure of a good soccer player was how many goals he scored. Well, in minutes of the she scored, but let me just stay now with the metaphor. Today, if you look at soccer statistics, what they measure is not just what he scored, but what they call assists. Where you play a key role in making the goal possible. And just as modern soccer evolved into a much more integrated system where team works together, so government in the modern economy works in a much more integrated way. And so therefore, it's how we assist each other as departments to achieve mandates. 8 years ago, the big criticism of government is there was no integration. Now, the system is still gap integration, but there are a lot more integration. In infrastructure, we've narrowed the gap quite significantly. That brings me to my last point, which is the request by the chairperson that in future reports we must begin to look at the impact of our interventions. And I think she's right. Because I think what we'd like to do is to know, yes, we intervene in the sugar industry with a tariff increase, or we intervene in competition with a set of conditions on a new mall or something, but what is the outcome of that? And that's not something that the state has generally measured. So that is the area that we hope we can do more work on. We ask for the indulgence of the committee. That's not something that we will do perfectly immediately. But by the end of this financial year, we want to have done at least some preliminary work measuring the impact of some of the competition measures that we put in place on issues like mergers and acquisitions. So that would be, that's an important part of our future work program. So acting chairperson, may I thank the committee for, as always, challenging and interesting questions. I hope we have been able to respond to all of the questions. If there's any that we've missed in the discussion, we'd be available afterwards and also in future sessions of the committee. So once again, on behalf of the Ministry and Department, I'd like to thank Parliament for the important role that you play in maintaining and promoting oversight of the work of government. And this is the past year we can feel it in the real economy. The headwinds are growing, and we have to do even more to be able to towards achieving our goal. And therefore, close coordination with Parliament is vital, to share with Parliament the challenges, but also some of our successes, because even in these difficult times, we are making successes, we're making breakthroughs, and we are able to create opportunities for South Africans to come into the economy as workers, as entrepreneurs. Thank you very much, Acting Chairperson.
So, thank you very much, Minister. Thank you very much, Jim and DG and Tim. I wonder if there are any follow-up questions on that. If there are none, the meeting is then adjourned. And that is to say that we are commemorating to the 8 years of the death of Thomas Sankara and Sakana. He died in 1987 on the 15th of October. Our visionary, outstanding one in the continent as well as.
Good evening, the Minister, the Honourable members, and everyone present in the meeting. I would like to announce that there is lunch in the Marketing Restaurant.
So we're going for lunch now.
Yeah, I think. I mean, Hello, Shad, yes? Yes. Right,